So, you know, when you're a kid and your parents tell you something that you don't like and you don't agree with, and you fight back really hard, and they turn around and say something like, "Well, wait, one day when you have kids." And even when I was a young kid, I never bought that particular line of argument too well. And as I got older and I didn't have kids, I figured that that was a bit of parental advice that was absolutely irrelevant to me. And I was very, very deeply wrong. Very deeply wrong because in January of 2001, I found myself leading a group of 30 college juniors from some of the best universities and colleges in the United States on a semester-long study tour of India, South Africa, and Brazil. And of course, yeah, everyone's going, "Whatever possessed you to think that that was a good idea, much less an idea of a vacation?" But I had good reasons. Up until that point, I had been teaching college for about 11 years. I had supervised dozens of students in the field. I had been traveling around the world since I was 17, and I had been a summer camp counselor for 2 years. So I thought I had it covered. And I was deeply wrong, very, very wrong, because even though we had spent 6 months planning this, and there was a whole team back in the States working out all the logistical details in Mumbai and Johannesburg, Cape Town and Rio, and all of these things, I really hadn't stopped to think about what was going to be required of me and what this job was really going to be like. And it didn't really hit me what it was going to be like until the day before we left. And we were assembling in New York, and we were getting together, and we were all in a big room at Columbia University, and we gave a talk and so forth. And then at the end, a bunch of the parents who had come to drop off their kids came up to the front of the room, and it was like a wedding reception or a funeral, and there's this line of parents coming up here. And I don't remember exactly what they all said, but it was variations on a theme of, "Please bring my kid home safe and sound." Some of the parents didn't say please. And I was worried about them because I got the feeling that if something went wrong, they would sue me. They seemed to be the type. But it wasn't what they said. It was the look in their eyes. It was a look of worry, of doubt, a little fear, and so forth. And I realized I had seen that look before. I had seen that look in the eyes of my parents every time I went off on one of my crazy adventures and trips back when I was a college student. And it really began to hit me then and that night as we were getting ready to leave that I had not prepared or packed my parachute for the kind of jump that I was about to have. And I began to realize, well, when I was 20, I had a big problem with authority. I remember I hated the kind of trip dads or team leaders that were part of these excursions that were on. And then I realized I had that Homer Simpson moment where, "Oh, I am that guy." And I realized that they were going to test me. They were going to test me. I didn't realize how quickly they were going to test me. We were flying the next day. We were flying to Mumbai via Paris. There was a 7-hour layover, and five kids, the Gang of Five, I came to call them, decided they were going to not miss this opportunity to see Paris, and they went off to do a commando excursion via taxi. They didn't tell anyone, and of course, they were late getting back. Everyone is on the plane. I'm standing there by the gate. They're about to close the door. I'm realizing I'm going to have to stay in Paris and call Interpol and start going through the hospital and police station records, because no one knew where these kids were. And finally, they run in, they get on the plane, and we sit down, and we take off. And within minutes, word of their exploit sort of percolates around the cabin by speed of mouth. It takes like 5 or 7 minutes, and it comes, and it hits me and my two colleagues, and I'm like, my first thought was, "Wow, that's cool. I would love to have done that." But that a split second later, that was followed by, "Oh, this is horrible. This cannot stand. I have to make a sort of, you know, I have to do something." And I really wanted to send them all back on the next plane once we got into Mumbai. My two colleagues, who are a little more level-headed than me, both of them also did not have kids, by the way, convinced me that that was too extreme. So instead, we settled on the next best thing, which was that I would read them the Riot Act once we got to Mumbai. I would give them a piece of my mind. And I gave them a big piece. Really big, long, yelling, gesturing, red-faced. And after 15 minutes of that, one of the kids just goes, "Whatever." And it was the first time I had been on the receiving end of a whatever. And it drove me mad. It drove me insane. And so that led in another 15-minute, you know, sort of yell fest. And I realized as soon as I had finished doing that, that was the stupidest thing I could possibly have done. I wish I wanted it back then and there, but it was too late. It was there. It was out there. Because by giving them a piece of my mind, I had shown them a real easy way inside my head. I drew them a diagram of where my buttons were. And those five kids proceeded to push those buttons relentlessly for the next 2 months. And by the time we got to Cape Town halfway through, I was a nervous wreck. I was a mess. But it wasn't just because of them. Actually, it was a lot more because of the fact, because everything that had been planned to the nth degree had been done in a parallel universe that did not exist in Mumbai, did not exist in Johannesburg. Every day required sort of MacGyverish-like improvisations on behalf of myself and my two colleagues. So it was incredibly stressful. It was impossible to be duly diligent by an American legal standard in terms of responding to, you know, the falling apart of logistics and so forth. And then you had these kids, five kids out of 30, acting out and going crazy and say, oh, we're going clubbing in Johannesburg. And I go, no, you're not. I took to camping out in the lobby to make sure they wouldn't escape the dorm, but they did anyway. And it was madness. And so by the time we got to Cape Town, I was a wreck. I wasn't sleeping. I had lost 10 pounds. And I was getting these migraine cluster headaches. It felt like my head was about to explode. I ended up going to the ER. And there was this great doctor, this giant Afrikaner fellow, about 6'6", really red hair, red skin. He looked like the sort of the actor James Cosmo in Game of Thrones, just a big dude here. And he just sat there while I explained what was going on, and he was just sort of shaking his head after a certain point, like, oh, God, you poor man. And he was reasonably sure I didn't have a brain tumor. He was fairly certain about that after I told him what was going on. So he goes, you must learn how to relax. I can't do an Afrikaans accent. You must learn how to relax. And he did three things that basically saved my life. He said, take 5 days off. Great, go sit by the beach. Gave me 5 days worth of muscle relaxers. He goes, take these, three a day, no more, no alcohol, fine. And then he goes, you must let them be responsible for themselves. You could only do so much. And, you know, that sounds like great common sense, and it really was. And it transformed the way in which I was dealing with the kids and with the trip, and it was responsible for me being successful in accomplishing my mission in bringing 29 kids home safe and sound to New York in the last week of April. And just so that you don't think I'm a bad person, the 30th kid was safe and sound the last time I saw him in Rio. He got to Rio, he was one of the gang of five, and he realized that he was even more miserable than I was. And I didn't even know it. And by the time we got to Rio, he decided he wanted to take his toys and go home. And I was, after I confirmed this with the project director and his parents, I said, goodbye. And it was wonderful. But by that time I had, you know, developed much more of a, not quite Zen sensibility, but I was letting things sort of wash over me. And, you know, to draw attention to the fact that these five kids were always acting up, most of the kids, 25 of the kids, were great. They were smart. They were intelligent. They asked wonderful questions of everyone. I have absolutely no hesitation in thinking that they have gone on to do amazing things in the last 11 years. And I was very proud of them. I was proud in a way that I imagine a parent is proud of a child that has done and accomplished a great deal under very trying circumstances. And I told them so, and I also was able to wish them from the bottom of my heart when we left and we split up that I really wished the best for them. I also had a wish for the Gang of Five, one that I did not express to them at the time of doing for the first, first time now, and that is that one day they would have kids just like themselves.